Fantastic. All right, let's go ahead and call this meeting of the TRPA Operations and Governance Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, November 17, 2021, and the time is approximately 10:35 in the morning. First item on the agenda is roll call to determine a quorum. Maria?
Ms. Salding?
Here.
Mrs. Sagaski?
I am here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Here.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Terrific, thank you. We'll move on to reviewing the rules for the day. To observe and participate in the meeting, please go to www.trpa.gov, select November 17th, 2021 Governing Board meeting. In this meeting on the calendar and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. In order to participate in this Operations and Governance Committee meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the committee. If you have contacted the TRPA for a reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter the PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is open to the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you are joining via the call-in number posted on our website, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the Operations and Governance Committee, you will need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial your unique PIN number. To committee members, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function. If you are online, or speak up if you are calling in. Please set your chat box now to message panelists and organizers to ensure that I see your message. Remote board members may only use the chat function to indicate a desire to speak. This function must not be used to have sidebar conversations. And please remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. And I see that we have, obviously, I think a majority of our committee members joining us. Barbara's on the phone. So the next item is approval of the agenda. Chris, any changes to the agenda?
There are no changes to the agenda.
Okay, then we'll deem the agenda approved as posted. Moving on to the next item, which is approval of minutes. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to review the minutes from October 27, 2021. You can find them on page 19 of your packet. Do any members of the committee wish to make any changes, additions, deletions, corrections of any kind? I see heads wagging. All right. So we'll assume that nobody has any recommended changes. So, Mario, will you please take the roll? Or we don't have to take the roll.
One moment, Shelley. Sorry, I was.
It's okay. Here. That's all right. We can actually do it. Voice vote.
You want to do a voice vote on that one?
Yeah, that'll be fine. All those in favor of approving the minutes as presented, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries. So moving on to the next item on our agenda, which is approval of our October financials. And they can be found on page 65 of your packet. Chris?
For the record, Chris Kyler, Finance Director. We have a fairly lengthy agenda today, so I'm going to be a little more brief than normal with the financials. I did want to make one comment, though, on the minutes. We are using voice recognition technology to generate those minutes, so you may find homonyms in there from time to time where the voice recognition has the wrong word. I think you can figure out what the right word is, but that's that. Can I have the first slide? This is the breakout where we are year to date, breaking it down between funding from state and local, fees and grants. The state and local is in fine shape. That's because we build the states at the beginning of the year, so we always start out with a big positive and then run it down. Fees is a little more complicated because these days fees come in basically three different buckets. We have the regular current planning fees that we regularly track. But we also get fees for services for both the AIS program and the Shoreline program. And those tend not to be evenly spread over the course of the year. So, for example, on both those programs, we've got about 50% of the year's budget already. But now we'll go into a dark period during the winter time, and then won't pick up until the spring again when the boating season comes back into play. Grants are showing a negative. That's normal because we bill those grants in arrears, so we're always behind on that. Not an issue in terms of recovering the cost or anything like that. Could I have the next chart, please? This chart shows where we are doing against budget. And you can see, again, the state revenue is at 100%. Fees for service are at 36%. On the revenue side, we're in great shape. On the expense side, compensation is right about where we would expect it to be given the timing of things, including we just finished our salary merit review cycle for the year. So those numbers will start to go up as that budget gets spent down. Contracts always runs late. That's lagging months, especially with our major general fund contracts with the universities. Otherwise, I don't think there's any real big news here on this chart. If we can go to the next chart, please. And on cash flow, what you really see there is the timing of the influx of the state revenues. State of Nevada is always very good and almost always gives us our allocation in July. The California money has moved around a little bit. September is normal, and that's when it came in this year. They've had a few years where there were later than that. And then, as you can see, we spend down those funds over the course of the year. It doesn't quite go to zero at the tail end there because we have outstanding contract payments to do after the calendar end of the year. With that, I'd be happy to take anybody's questions.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Pretty straightforward. Does any member of the committee have any questions or comments regarding the October financials? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to a public comment. If any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, we have no public comment on that item.
Okay, thank you. Then we will close public comment. If there are no further comments by the committee, I'll entertain a motion to recommend to the governing board adoption of the October approval of the October financials.
Madam Chair, so moved.
All right. Second. Everyone is so quirky today. Okay. All right. We have a motion to approve the October financials. If there are no further questions or comments, Maria, will you please take the roll?
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you. All right. We'll move on to the next item, which is item 4, recommendation for approval of the release of City of South Lake Tahoe air quality mitigation funds in the amount of $75,000 and water quality mitigation funds in the amount of $75 toward purchase of a new high-efficiency street sweeper. This item is agenda number 4, and it appears on page 89 of your packet. Tracy, are you with us? There you are. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So for the record, I'm Tracy Campbell. I'm here on behalf of EIP Division Manager Kimberly Carringer. This is the first of two requests we have for you today. This one comes from the City of South Lake Tahoe, who are looking for $75,000 in water quality funds and $75,000 in air quality funds towards the purchase of a new high-efficiency Elgin street sweeper. You can see the picture there. Street sweeping is a critical piece in meeting TMDL load reductions for the city by reducing sediment on the road surface and preventing those fine particulates from entering the lake. So the city intend to use the requested funds along with $146,000 from their general fund to complete the package for the sweeper. We do have Jim Marino from the city on the line with us if you have any questions. And with that, I will pass it back to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tracy. Jim, did you want to add anything to Tracy's very succinct presentation?
No, that was perfect. And thank you, Tracy. I just want to add that, you know, this is to replace an aging and outdated sweeper that is no longer feasible to maintain anymore. So I just want to say it's not a brand new one. It's not an additional asset. It's to replace an existing one.
Okay, right. Yep. Thank you. Well, I'm just curious, what is the average lifespan of a piece of equipment like this?
Sweepers, you know, if we can get 10 years out of a sweeper, that's pretty long. Our maintenance teams are really good, but they take a lot of abuse. The decomposed granite up here really tears the unit apart over time.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Jim. Yep. Any questions by members of the committee for either Tracy or Jim? Tracy, I just had a question. I noticed under conditions, there are two conditions, conditions 6 and 7, that don't seem to be applicable to this request. One is a final inspection requirement, and the other references construction. Is that just kind of a holdover from a previous agenda item? You're muted. Tracy, you're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that is my clerical error. That's a holdover from a previous staff report. My apologies. I'll make that correction.
Oh, no, that's all right. Thank you for that. All right. Seeing that no one on the committee has any questions regarding this item, we will move to public comment. If any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, we have no public comment for this item.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll close public comment, bring it back to the committee. And I would entertain a motion to recommend to the Governing Board approval of the release subject to the conditions contained in this memorandum.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Alexis. We have a motion. Any comments on the question? All right. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Gustafson.
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
Terrific. Thank you. All right, moving on.
Thank you, everybody.
Yes. Chris? Is that
you? I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, is that Jim? Yes, you're welcome, Jim. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care. Item number 5 is a recommendation to approve for release to El Dorado County Operations and Maintenance Mitigation Funds in the amount of $81,000 toward the purchase of a new CARB-compliant vacuum water truck. And Tracy, are you still with us?
I'm back.
You're back. All right.
I'm back. Yeah, thank you. And so I'm back with item number 5, also hopefully succinct. So again, just for the record, Tracy Campbell on behalf of EIP Division Manager Kim Carringer. Another mitigation funding request for maintenance equipment, and this time from El Dorado County. They're looking to use $81,000 in operations and maintenance funding towards the purchase of a replacement vacuum rudder truck. The vac truck's an important piece of equipment for El Dorado County. They use it to clean and maintain sediment traps, drainage inlets, channels, and treatment systems. And their current truck is outdated and not CARB compliant, and so mandated for replacement per the California Air Resources Board. The county intend to use the requested funds, the $81,000, to complete a funding package that will also include $250,000 from their general road fund, and then an additional $169,000 request from the Federal Highways Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program. We do have Russ Weigart with us from the county, and he can also help answer any questions you might have. So I will pass that back. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. Pretty straightforward. Russ, did you have anything to add?
That was well stated. Thank you very much. Very important piece of equipment for maintaining all of our systems, drop inlets, DIs, traps, pipes, huge for the water quality program. And again, outdated in terms of air quality. So this will have significant air quality benefits as well as water quality benefits. And a very necessary piece of equipment for the county. So very much appreciate this, and thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for either Tracy or Russ on this agenda item from the committee? All right, seeing none, we will move on to public comment. And if any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, there is no public comment on this item.
Terrific. Thank you. We'll close public comment, and we will move on to the required motion, which is to recommend to the Governing Board to approve the release subject to the conditions contained in the memorandum. Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
Thank you. All right. We have a motion to approve. Any discussion by the committee? Seeing none, Mario, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Russ, for being here. Okay, next item is item number six. And this is, we will be addressing items 6 through 13 in your agenda package. It begins, the information on these items begin on page 99 and are completed on page 135 of your packet. So, Kira, if you could just give us a kind of a succinct summary of each agenda item. We'll wait until you conclude your presentation, and then if any member of the committee has any questions regarding any specific item, they'll speak up.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I'll try to be brief on these eight different items. Good morning, everyone. For the record, I'm Kira Smith, Senior Transportation Planner for TRPA, here to present on the annual TDA allocations. And also, before I dive in, I did want to let you know we do have representatives from both TTD and TART online available to help answer questions if anything comes up. So just keep that in mind. So today we're seeking approval of eight different items beginning on page 99 of your packet, including seven different funding allocations for TRPA and for our transit operators through the Transportation Development Act. And this is something we do every year, but I do just want to quickly refresh everyone's memory and give you all a little bit of background on the program and funding for this year. Next slide. So the Transportation Development Act was established in California back in 1971 to provide funding for transit capital and operations. And there are currently three different fund sources available to transit operators under this act. And the funding and other program elements are administered by regional transportation planning agencies, which is TRPA for the Lake Tahoe region. TRPA receives the allocation amounts from the state and the counties, and then we use a formula to calculate the splits between our two transit operators. And our formula considers the population of each operator's primary service area, prior year ridership on each transit system, and the amount of service the operator actually provided in the prior year. Next slide. So the three different fund sources administered through the TDA program are listed here. First, the Local Transportation Fund. These funds are derived from a quarter cent general sales tax within each county and then returned to that county where they were generated. And then state transit assistance funds are derived from a statewide sales tax on gasoline and distributed to areas based on a formula that considers population and operator revenues. And then finally, the last source, State of Good Repair, is relatively new and is funding from the Road Repair and Accountability Act of 2017. Next slide. So here is a breakdown of the allocations for the last five fiscal years, including the allocations for this fiscal year 2022. You'll notice that following the decrease in funding last year, due primarily to the pandemic, the allocations are back up and actually very healthy for this fiscal year, which is really encouraging just given the challenges the operators faced in the last year. Next slide. And then here's that same data, and I just wanna specifically draw your attention to the dotted lines. So last year, the TDA funds did decrease quite a bit as a result of the pandemic, but a few months ago, we were notified by the state controller's office that they had underestimated the state transit assistance funds for fiscal year 21. And so there is some additional funding that the operators will receive from the last fiscal year. And that additional funding is written into the two state transit assistance resolutions that you will take action on today. So there was an additional $73,000 for TART and an additional $113,000 for TTD. And then you'll also notice that the funding allocations have recovered and then some for this fiscal year. Next slide. So with that, I have two different action slides, this one and then one more. But before I explain each of those, just wanted to pause and see if there are any questions from committee members on any of the previous slides.
Any questions? Oh, Carol, not. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. So the first action that we're requesting the board take today is to approve the project list for each operator for their state of good repair funding. So the project list must be approved before the funding allocations for state of good repair funding can be approved. And each of the projects are listed here. So TTD plans to use their state of good repair allocation on preventative maintenance for their vehicles, and then TART plans to use it towards the purchase of a 40-foot transit bus. Next slide. And then next, we're requesting that the board approve the 7 Transportation Development Act allocations for TRPA, TTD, and TART for the fiscal year 2022. TRPA's allocation includes $75,000 for planning and administration, and we use these funds to continue administering this program each year, and then the remaining funds are split between the 2 transit operators. And also included in 2 of these 7 allocations is the additional fiscal year 21 STA funding that I mentioned. So we're also seeking approval on that as written into the 2 STA resolutions. And then this is just the breakdown of all of the different allocations for this fiscal year. So I'll be happy again to answer any questions, but with that, I think that's it.
Do the representatives from TTD and TART have anything to add?
Nothing from Placer County to add at this point. I think Kira covered it all, unless there's any questions.
Okay, thank you.
George Smith with TTD, thank you very much for the presentation, Kira. Nothing further to add.
Okay, all right, thank you. Cindy, anything you want to add as Placer County's representative? Okay. Kira, I just have, this is not really substantive, but on the first resolution, this is the one authorizing the approval of FY21-22 State of Good Repair Project List. This appears on page 99. The resolution, this happens to me all the time, in the second whereas, it's integrated the third whereas into the same paragraph. You might want to break that out and drop it down just to make it the formatting correct on that resolution.
Okay, thank you for that.
Sure, that's fine. And I just had kind of a general question. I know that some of these funding sources require fair revenue requirements. The ultimate objective is to have free transit in the basin. How is that going to impact the availability of funds from these sources unless that requirement is changed by legislative act? Maybe that's an unfair question to ask you to respond
to. So we do actually have about 5 years ago, the board adopted a resolution that did require a fare box recovery of 15% for fixed routes and 10% for demand response. And we gave the operators 5 years to hit that target. So we do have 1 more year before there are any financial penalties associated with that. However, the state of California is currently working through legislative action to try to basically get rid of the financial penalties associated with that, just knowing that a lot of transit agencies in the state are moving towards free fare transit. So we'll see what happens with that. And we definitely are coordinating with the operators, but hoping it does not come to any financial penalties.
Okay, Cindy, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I wanted to weigh in that I think what we're trying to use is our local dollars to be that match for the fare box. When we see that we're using local generated dollars to match these funds, but I'll defer to Jamie if I'm incorrect in that, if she wants to speak in. But that's how we've tried to recognize it with those fare box requirements.
Cindy, yes, that is correct. We use our local transient occupancy tax funds that are used for free to the rider transit, but we also have a multitude of different partners who contribute as well in lieu of their employee pass program.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, just to add really quick, that is one of the, I guess the requirement says that the operators have to either hit that 15% through Farebox or local funds. So any funding that comes from private organizations could count towards, or private taxes could count towards that requirement.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. All right. Okay. Any further questions or comments by members of the committee on this item? Seeing none, we'll move to public comment. Kira, thank you for your presentation. Any member of the public wishing to address the Operations and Governance Committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, there is no public comment for this item.
Okay. All right. Then we will close public comment. And I will entertain a motion to recommend to the governing board to approve the proposed resolution attaching an attachment to the staff report. And again, this would be items number 6 through 13.
Madam Chair, I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Cindy. Any comments on the question? Seeing none, Mario, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. So let's move on to the next agenda item, which is discussion and possible recommendation of inflation adjustment to the TRPA application filing fee schedule. Chris or Allie? I guess Allie is going to be presenting this.
Yes. Hello. For the record, my name is Ali Borowski. I'm a senior planner with the current planning division.
Good morning.
Today, we are presenting an annual application filing fee schedule changes. We are proposing an increase to the filing fee schedule based on the Western Region Consumer Price Index. And the increase would be a 5.3% increase based on that CPI. Our MOU partners, am I supposed to be showing my screen? I can do that. Or I don't know if I need to.
I don't have your slides, Ali, so can you present your slides?
I sure can.
Thank you.
Ellie, if you can't. Oh, there we go. Okay. All right.
Okay. Can you see the screen?
Yes.
Okay. So, our MOU partners have been notified, and we will post the increase to our website and email consultants these changes. We propose to have these fees go into effect January 24th, 2020. And just a couple little bullet points here. It is standard practice and included in Nevada revised statutes, the NRS, to use this Western Region CPI. A 3% increase was included in the FY22 budget approved by Governing Board this year. And two things of clarifying language added to the filing fee items. So presenting that, I'd like to throw it over to Chris if he has any other items he'd like to share about this.
Yeah, thank you, Ali. Just a comment that the planning fees are kind of broken down into two groups. One are flat fees for different projects, and these increases relate to that. There's a separate group of projects, large projects, that are usually done on a cost reimbursement basis. So this 5% will increase the revenue from those fixed fee items, which is roughly half of our planning revenue. The other stuff that's done on a cost reimbursement basis is always actual cost, so it's not impacted by this change. We did make a change to the index because we think this is a better index to use, and it's more consistent with NRS. If anybody has any questions, we would be happy to answer.
So, Chris, are we treating this planning division account as kind of an enterprise fund?
Kind of, yes. It's a fund that does not currently cover all the cost of providing the current planning services. So in this instance, it is being subsidized to some extent by the general fund.
And will continue to be somewhat subsidized even with the recommended increase.
Yes, we would have to increase fees by about 20% in order to get back up to full cost recovery. We did a major increase about 3 years ago. We don't think that's appropriate to increase fees by that much at this point.
any pushback on these recommended increases?
Do you want to take that, Ellie, or you want me to? We have not received any feedback from the county's negative feedback. This is kind of routine. Douglas County just up theirs in their board meeting last week, and the other counties are doing the same.
Ellie, did you ask?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, the first filing fee increase we've implemented in a long time was 2018, so this has been an annual adjustment since 2018, and we haven't heard any pushback from any side public or our MOU partners.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So any member of the committee have any questions or comments regarding this proposal? No? Barbara? All right.
No, Shelley, thank you. Sorry. I had to find my cursor to put myself off of mute.
No worries.
But I don't have any questions. I know that I'd usually be the one that would vote no on this, but I remember when we talked about this the last time we voted on it. So I'm not one for increasing fees, but I understand the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, then we will move to public comment. If any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, there is no public comment on this item.
All right, then we will close public comment. And if there are no comments from the committee, I will entertain a motion to recommend to the governing board to approve the resolution as shown on Attachment A, amending the TRPA application filing fee schedule analysis, which will be effective. These increases will be effective as of January 24th, 2022.
Move to approve the resolution.
Thanks, Alexis. We have a motion. Mari, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
All right. Thank you. All right. So we'll move on to the next item, which is a briefing by TRPA's investment advisor, Wells Fargo / Principal Group. Carissa, it seems to me this transition has been in process for a long time, but I guess it's finally going to be realized, and we will be doing business with the Principal Group for the foreseeable future. And we have a couple of guests with us today, Bruce Runnington and Gail Borden. Would you care to introduce them?
Sure. Let me first tee up this. First of all, you've completed now the voting portion of this, so this is information only from this point forward. We hold substantial monies in trust for other parties. We're talking about roughly $11 to $12 million. The biggest portion of that is mitigation fees that applicants pay to offset development impacts. We hold that money and distribute it to the counties through this process you just went through with the vac trucks and things like that. The second large bucket there is securities that are put on deposit. And those monies, because they're more of a long-term investments, we've gone out and set up this additional investment fund through Wells Fargo. And that's what Bruce and Gay administer for us and manage for us. Gay, I don't see Bruce showing up on my list of attendees. Did you want to take this? Okay. Could you unmute yourself? Apologies. Go ahead.
I apologize. My children wish I had a mute button to be used as well. Let me reach out to Bruce. He should have been online about 20 minutes ago and may have dialed in, so I need to double check that. I appreciate that, Chairman Aldean, you mentioned our transition to the principal financial group, and just wanted to brief that that transition actually, or migration, is not happening for TRPA until President's Day weekend. So I'm asking you to give us just a little more patience in this. But both Bruce and Gay have job offers, and we will transition with TRPA on that weekend. So I appreciate that. Let me, if you will, just reach out to Bruce, because I'm the lovely administrator. He's the fabulous investment advisor.
Are those your official titles, Gail?
Well, they would be if I had a vote. I am considered the relationship manager, and Bruce is the investment manager.
Okay, all right. So is there any sign of Bruce?
Yeah, can anybody hear me yet?
Yes, yes.
Oh, good. Okay, I was trying to mess with this thing. I've been on for about 20 minutes, and I can see you and hear you, and now I see my stuff up on the screen. I don't know if you can see me. I'm still working out of the basement next to the cat's litter box, so I just can't wait for COVID to be over. Oh, great. I'm glad to be able to meet with you guys today and run through this. It'd be a lot more fun if we could see each other, but I think, you know, from a health standpoint, I'm finally getting allowed to travel, but required to wear a mask anytime I'm with a client, whether you have a mask mandate in place or not. We have to be fully vaccinated to travel. I actually got my booster last week, so I'm in pretty decent shape. But I think in abundance of caution, we're trying to be a little more careful. And I know you guys are going virtual as well. I'll be there as soon as you guys will let me. Anyway, quick rundown kind of on very briefly on where the economy is and what we see going forward. You know, we've come through a pretty nasty recession driven by the COVID outbreak starting in March of 2020. You know, even though we had a nice bounce back in the latter half of 2020, we had, 3.5% contraction in terms of GDP, worse since World War II. Then we bounced back, and, you know, so far 2021's been pretty positive. Key things we've seen that have happened is the economy's turned around. We're growing at about a 5.8% rate. We had a bit of a COVID pullback in economic growth during the third quarter as we continue to get some Delta surges. Job losses, you know, we went to 14-15% official unemployment. Reality is it was higher than that. We've now put about 78-80% of those people back to work. Some sectors continue to be tough, particularly hospitality. I've got to think that's got to be hurting Nevada in particular, getting employees to work, but also still a fair number of people that are hesitant to go on vacation, especially if you're jammed together. And I can't think of a place that's more jammed together than a casino, but other than maybe a college football game. But things are definitely improving. One thing we see that continues to get worse from what we were looking at earlier in the year is inflation. I think the Fed and we both looked at inflation as being something of a transitory issue as we came out of the COVID meltdown. And it's proving to be much more long-lived. Supply chain issues, that type of thing, have really popped up costs. I'm looking at oil as of the last couple of days. Right now, West Texas Intermediate is $77.79. But a year ago, it was $41 a barrel. So we've had a significant pickup there. Gold has actually dropped in price. Hot rolled steel, and I've got a client I met with yesterday in Portland, a manufacturing company. Steel price has gone from $750 a ton to $1,680 a ton. And you talk about transitory inflation with those guys, and they build products for the lumber industry where prices have went crazy. They'll tell you that inflation's very real, very alive, and they don't see it turning around right away. So we think where the Fed had been doing everything they could to jack inflation up above to their 2% target, because we were running 1.25% per year. Now we're seeing it to 3.5-4% year. The most recent report just a few days ago was at a 6% annual rate. We think we'll stay there through early 2022 and then maybe moderate back to a 3.5% annual rate. But that's a big change from the 1% or so we've been used to for the last several years. The good news is we look at the economic cycle, and I think also to a certain extent the market cycle, as we've gone from recovery, we've transitioned into expansion. We think the economy will continue to expand for the foreseeable future, 18, 24 months anyway. I've been in the business long enough not to try to forecast much beyond, you know, Friday's rain showers. But we think at this point, the economy is set up to do something of an expansion. I always love it when I see economic forecasts, you know, 3.2% down from 3.4. I thought, you know, God invented the decimal point to show that economists have a sense of humor. You know, economic forecasting is difficult. So I always try to, let's get a middle of the road portfolio and don't mess this up. But overall, you know, things are headed up. The bipartisan infrastructure funding program got passed. The Republicans are jumping up and down because it's a billion. The Democrats are jumping up and down because it's not enough. The reality is that was about $515 million in new spending. The rest of that $1 billion were previously allocated amounts. But the good news is, you know, some of that money is going to get released. That's also spread out over several years. It's not a $500 billion check we're going to write tomorrow. But we think that will be stimulative. The tougher question is the Democrats want to give everybody to everything to everybody for free in the new program, and the Republicans want to be meanies about it. Hopefully at some point with the next program, they'll find some happy medium and be able to work that out. And the last thing I'm going to throw out, this really doesn't hit your account, but I think it's kind of interesting. Had a lot of clients early in the year, you know, well, the market's recovered, we should take some money off the table. And they cite that old saying, sell in May and go away. If you bailed out of the market on May 1st, the S&P 500 has been up 10% since then. So for people trying to time the market and look at tradition of, you know, ignore the market over the summer, they actually left a lot of money on the table. So where we are now, if you will turn to page two. I'm not going to talk about equities because we really don't have equities in the account other than the comment that we've had a pretty strong recovery. Markets back above where it was before COVID hit us, and even subsequent to the end of the quarter, if you look at the 9:30 stock market return showing the S&P up 15%. As of this morning, S&P 500 is at, got the number as of last night's close, up 26.7% year to date. So it's been a very, very strong period since the end of the quarter. At the same time, at the last Fed meeting last week, the Fed announced they were going to start their taper. The Fed has been spending $80 billion a month on treasury bonds, buying them in the market, $40 billion a month in mortgages as a way of injecting liquidity into the system. And that was certainly a positive for the economy starting a year ago, March, year ago, April, when the whole COVID mess started. And it's been very stimulative to the economy, kept a lot of people afloat. Recognize that the economy is growing and we're starting to get some inflationary pressure. The Fed's finally decided to ease back on the helicopter money where they just fly over and drop bills on people. They're going to be reducing the treasury purchases currently at 80 by $10 billion a month starting this month in November, and $5 billion a month in mortgages starting this month in November. And they will continue that. So the money injection process should be done by June of 2023. I think the Fed will probably pause a month or two and then start raising rates probably in the third quarter of 2023. We're looking for about 25 basis point increase and a 25 basis point increase in the fourth quarter, 25 basis points, first quarter 23, 25 basis points in the second quarter of 23, and that'll get us back to a more normal bill rate and keep the brakes on the economy to keep it from going crazy. And that's important because if I'm looking at 90-day bills, I've got live feed on my Bloomberg terminal right now. The 90-day bill rate is 0.04% right now. Two-year treasuries right now are yielding a half a percentage point, and that's after kind of a pop-up after the Fed talked about the taper. So it's a pretty nasty inflation or interest rate environment. Let's go to page 3 because I think this is instructive as far as what the bond market has done in the last year or so. And when I look across that first row, 1 to 3 year treasury bills, the quarter to date return, third quarter of 2021, is 0.0%. Year to date, 0.00. 1 year, 0.00. 3 years, 1.1. So this is really reflective of the Fed flooding the system with money and pretty low demand for borrowed money. 1 to 3 year government, which is one of the key things we look at in this account, 1 year return, 0.00. The intermediate returns, we had a good quarter. We were up a tenth of a percent. Then if you look down further, try to drop about 5 rows down, intermediate government credit. Now, we're actually benchmarked against the 1 to 3 intermediate or 1 to 3 government credit, A rated or better. And that's also in compliance with not only your policy statement, but state law for both Nevada and California as it applies to this type of account. So this is a 1 to 3 government credit that's showing here the intermediate government credit is out to about 10 years maximum maturity, includes triple Bs, which are a third of the index. And even there, they lost money year to date. 1 year return is 1.1%, primarily a contributor from corporate bonds. And then if you look at the aggregate bond index down there at the bottom, year to date down 1.6%. That's the broad bond market that most pension and other investment people deal with. So it's been a ugly environment for bonds. The good news is we're not in too bad a shape as far as the account goes. Let's roll to page 11.
Bruce, before you leave this page, I just have a quick question. I know that we typically no longer, we avoid investing longer for a period longer than 5 years. Looking at this chart, the 3-year return is significantly higher in some cases. No, I was just wondering.
Policy, the maximum that we can go is out 5 years, but you know, for a long time, all we did was roll bills, and that was, I think, 2 CFOs back. And where we are right now is with the uncertainty, particularly with the fires, the drought, the economy, and everything else. One thing Chris and I do is speak frequently and kind of look at where's the risk, offsetting this with what's in the LAIF account, for example, the 2 state accounts, and really look at it from the standpoint of how much liquidity do we have to maintain, and also how much can I put in corporates in this account based on what's in the other 2 accounts. So we've been running this just maximum maturity out a couple years recently, and we didn't know, particularly with the fires, God help us if you have a lot of remediation payments that have to go out of here, what we did not want to do is find ourselves in the situation of having to sell bonds with 5 years to go at a loss to make refunds outside of the account. So we've run this over the last couple of years as really a souped up money market account. I'd love to see some stability where we could go out to 5 and increase the corporate bond exposure. But I've really looked at this as rule 1, don't lose money. Rule 2, do the best you can get without losing money. And rule 3, don't forget rule 1. And so this is not the typical bond account that I would run. This has been run very conservatively.
Good. Well, that's
fine. If I could just jump in there a minute, Shelley. We model our investment policy after the investment policies of the 2 states, as they apply to local governments. And that's where the 5-year restriction comes from.
No, I understand that. I think what you're doing is wise, looking at the disparity between you know, a 3-year and 5-year return. So that's fine. No, I think it's very prudent.
I'm happy because I can come back and tell you we didn't lose money. It's a lot more difficult conversation to talk to somebody. We only lost, you know, 70 basis points while the market lost 120. Aren't we good? As opposed to, of all the stuff that you guys have to worry about, particularly given the hellish 2021 you've had, followed by a really ugly 2020, last thing you need to worry about is losing money in this account. Ideally, I'm going to make you a lot of money and you're going to sleep at night. But looking at what I'd have to do to make money in this environment, you wouldn't sleep at night.
Well, I appreciate that.
So let's look at 11. Actually, this is kind of an interesting chart to feed right into this. And this is actually a double A discount curve that we get from our in-house actuary. But I think it's really useful to see where rates have gone. And the solid blue line is a double A corporate bond curve. And that's typically the curve that actuaries use to look at the discount rate on a pension liability. So for example, if the average maturity or the average duration of your pension liability is 20 years, they would look at this and say, okay, my assumed growth rate for funding and contribution purposes.
Unknown caller.
Hold on, let me, I'm tracking people down all day. Let me shut off this phone. I'm going to go to airplane mode here. Plus that it came from a suspicious location. I get the scammers have finally got my cell phone number. So I get a couple calls a day. You know, my Amazon account's been hacked, even though I don't have an Amazon account. So for example, at 20 years, your assumption is that you're going to make about 3% a year. And you can see back the faint gray line was the end of 2018. Back then you were making more like 4.5. If we take this down to 3 years, for example, and these are corporate bonds, these are not treasuries, which are quite a bit lower. At the end of the year, the solid black line, 3-year bonds were yielding less than 50 basis points. We've actually seen rates go up a little bit, up 25 basis points at the 3-year level as of 9/30. If I look at two years, they've gone up about 35 basis points, up to about 52 basis points. So it's actually been an environment where short bonds have given you negative returns year to date. So I'm pretty happy to be at zero. But it gives you an idea of the environment that that we're working in. Turning to page 13, quickly look at cash flows. And I think this is kind of useful for the quarter. We were at $11,946,061. Net contributions were negative $7,400. That's basically the management fee. And we managed to make $7,321. So we broke even. We made enough money to cover the fee. Year to date, we're actually under that, given the tough bond market, particularly in September. We've had $22,000 in fees. We've made $13,900. But if I start looking at the 1-, 3-, 5-, and 10-year numbers, in a more normal interest rate environment, you can see we've been able to cover our fee and make money for you and actually grow the account. Now, Chris transfers money in and out of the account, or we'll put money into LAIF or take money out of LAIF using that as a cushion. So this is a little bit more of a permanent pool. But I think the key thing is I go back, at least over the last 5 years, we've made more money than you've paid in fees. And then we had some contributions come in over the last 10 where that's been a positive number. Quite a while ago, you had quite a bit of money come out. I think what was her name? Not Robin, but the one the year before that. Robin, I think, when I first started working with you, actually pulled a bunch of money out of the account. And that's the reason for the negative contributions since inception a few years ago. But anyway, you get an idea of where the cash flow is. Allocation shows up on 14. I've been running a little bit higher cash, which actually helped us as of September 30th, as we saw rates rising, last thing I want to do is get caught with a bunch of long bonds in a rising rate, falling price environment. I'm closer to 5% right now. But the list of bonds that we own are on page 15. I'll let you catch up there, whoever's running the slides. There we go. Right now, I have about 11% of the bonds invested in corporates, A-rated or better. That leaves me about 78% of the portfolio in short treasuries, 2 years or less, and 10% of the money in cash. And as I have bonds mature, for example, you know, we've had one mature on 9/30. We've got a couple more, one on 10/31. We've reinvested that in either treasuries or corporates based on where we see the best yield. Performance shows up on page 18. And the benchmark that shows up on this, wait till you turn the page. One more, please. Let's see. Okay, up, back one. Back one more. We seem to have a, okay, one more back from that. 16. Oh, okay. Can't read the big numbers. Okay, 16. Here's how we did for the quarter. We were up 0.0%. The benchmark, which is the Barclays 1-3 government credit A-rated or better, which is about a third corporate bonds, was up 0.08. Short treasuries, the Barclay or the Bloomberg Bank of America 0-2 year treasury index was actually negative. Right below that, you see a row that says fixed income. This is how the bonds that we owned did. And that's a net number. So for example, year to date, our bonds are up 0.12%. Short treasuries are up zero. One to three government credit, A or better, is up 0.3%. Our bonds did better. The investment pool was down 0.07%. That's net of the fees. So then when I go out to 1, 3, and 5 year numbers, for example, 5 year numbers, the total pool was up 1.17%. The bonds in the pool were up 1.45%. Short treasuries were up 1.42%. The 1-3 government credit A or better was up 1.79. So the performance numbers are certainly competitive. 3 years numbers were up 151. The bonds were up 179. The benchmark was up 279. The difference being what we held in cash and the fact that we're significantly overweighted in treasuries so that we don't end up with a negative number. So essentially, I'm just playing this really, really close to the vest. In fact, if you roll to page 19, I've got the breakdown of the bond portfolio. So I think the interesting takeaway is I'll start with the upper right-hand window pane and where we are in terms of allocation. With the various indexes, whether it's the Barclays aggregate, which is, you know, 20-year bonds, with mortgages and everything else in there, or the 1-3 government bond, which is really conservative. As soon as a bond gets under 365 days to maturity, it drops out of the index. So you don't measure the performance of the cash. We've always run a fair amount of this in short bonds, and we let the bonds mature. We don't sell them when they've got less than a year to go and lengthen it out. We always have constant maturity of bonds. So notice here, in this case, 49% of the portfolio is under 1 year, 50% of the portfolio is under 2 years, as opposed to the index that has stuff out to 5 years. That's kind of the idea that we're going to be conservative here, and we've got constant cash flow. So if you have funds that need to be remediated, I always have bonds maturing and cash ready to go. In terms of quality, in the lower right-hand corner, we have essentially 80% of the portfolio, 79.79%, in treasuries or agency bonds, the balance being in corporate. So it puts our average quality at AA. Now, there's a little quirk that I want to point out. our bond software reporting that we use an outside vendor called Clearwater. They supply the software. We do the work. Our software takes a split rating. So if I've got a bond that one agency rates it as double A and another rating rates it as single A, we take the most conservative of the two ratings, and that becomes the governing rating. So in your case, if it has to be A or better, if a bond drops to triple B plus in one index or one rating agency and it's still rated A in the other agency, we sell the bond because that would be a violation of your policy statement. So in the case, S&P rates U.S. Treasuries as double A plus. Moody's rates them as triple A. So we take the more conservative approach, and we've put all those treasury bonds, which are about as bomb-proof as you get, and reported them as double A, simply because we're going to take the most conservative reporting. And I'll show you where that sits here in a little bit. So we're, like I said, about 75% govies, 11% corporates, the balance being in cash. Next page, please. One thing that we do is we want to make sure that we don't have over concentration in any corporate bond. So if we get a bankruptcy issue and you see a bond start to really deteriorate in price, in most cases, I'm going to see something start to get downgraded. I'm going to sell it rather than hang on to something that's deteriorating. Or if it gets below single A, I have to sell it anyway. But no single issue represents more than 2% or so of the portfolio. So, for example, we've got Hershey, Chevron, Caterpillar, Bank of America, and Emerson Electric all representing between 1.5% and 2% of the portfolio so that we don't have any bankruptcy issues hitting the portfolio. And you can see we're spread out between, you know, not that many allocation or not that many industries simply because it's a fairly small allocation to treasury or to corporates. Let's roll to the next page, actually two pages. This is a list of the holdings, and I think this is kind of instructive. If you can scroll this down where we can see the bottom of this page, or maybe you have to reduce the size slightly, you can see for each security. For example, up in the corporate securities toward the top, we have show Costco. S&P rates at A+. Fitch does not have a rating on it. Moody's gives it a AA3. So we would view this as an A+ rated bond. Toronto Dominion Bank, TD Bank's great company, AA- by Fitch, A1 by Moody's, A by S&P, Chevron's AA-, AA2 by Moody's, good solid bond. So there's the average rating of the corporate portfolio. And then down at the bottom, and can we see the bottom of this page? And if not, I'll just have to tell you what's there. In the treasury section, where we have both the treasury and agency bonds rated, S&P shows them AA+, Fitch shows them AAA, Moody shows them AAA. We put those into your report as AAs, again, from a conservative standpoint. One more page, please. Okay, here's actually the bottom of the treasury page. So you notice AA- is how S&P's rated the whole treasury portfolio. Fitch and Moody's have given them AAAs. And at the bottom is the average rating for all of the bonds in the entire portfolio. And that's why we report it as a AA. So nothing in there that has a tremendous amount of risk. The corporate bonds are all really high quality, very short, the longest maturity sitting in there is September of 23. On the treasuries, you can see the rundown. They were on the previous page, 21, 22, go out as far as 23 on a few bonds. But, you know, we're really in good shape. I would love to see a low-risk environment where you have positive cash flow and rates go up and I can start buying higher coupon bonds. And my guess is 6 months or a year down the road, we are going to see higher rates. And those treasuries, as they mature, I'm going to be able to roll those into higher yielding treasuries or better yet, higher yielding corporates. But I think in a rising rate environment with the Fed starting to put the brakes on things, I'm pretty comfortable with where we are right now. This is not a portfolio that's going to get killed by rising rates. It's not a portfolio that's going to get killed by defaults if we were to have the economy take a sudden nosedive. So in short, we're in pretty good shape.
That's great, Bruce. Thank you so much. Quick question for you. How nimble are you when a investment is downgraded? I mean, do you wait to see whether or not there's going to be some sort of adjustment? Or do you sell immediately?
It depends on the company. It also depends on what my credit analysts are telling me. And that's one of the nice things about the principal acquisition. I have three times the credit analysis team that I have now, which I'm looking forward to. But we've got some really good credit analysts. I get notification the day of a downgrade. So if something happens, I might get an email at 2 o'clock in the afternoon that Moody's has downgraded something from AA+ to AA. I'm very aware of what's going on. If we have any kind of credit concern, I get an email within hours from our fixed income credit team, hang on to it or sell it. So if I get a sell, I've learned this the hard way in 40 years of running money. When the credit guy or gal says that they're not comfortable with the bond, I don't second guess them. If the credit people that eat and breathe this stuff daily say to sell something, I sell it. Now, if I get something, and we actually had this happen in the account 4 or 5 years ago, Best Buy got downgraded to junk. And it got downgraded to BBB+ about 6 weeks before it matured. And Best Buy had just gone to the market and issued $500 million worth of new bonds, and the bond funds just snapped them right up. They were liquid as all get out. I gave Chris a call, said, the policy statement says we have to sell it. I think that would be really dumb. We'd take a hit. We've got 6 weeks to go. The credit is good. And we held onto that bond and collected the full face rather than sell it at a loss. That's only happened once. It's very rare. And I think we had Oracle bonds got downgraded to BBB+, and they had about 9 months to go. We held on to those. But I only do that after Chris and I talk about it. But if the credit analysts don't like it, I don't care if it's only 3 weeks till it matures. If the credit guys say sell it, we sell it. We don't mess around with them.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, I don't know if I'm assuming that Bud and Cindy are still with us, and Barbara is still on the phone. So, Bruce, is that the end of your presentation?
That's the end of mine. I think Gay has a few things.
Hey, Gay.
Actually, we addressed the principal issue right at the very front when we were waiting to see that Bruce was on. I want you to know that there are some pluses. We are trying to upend Chris's process as little as possible. So as we make this migration, we will be on the same reporting platform at Principal as we are at Wells Fargo. We are retaining the same account numbers. We are really trying our very best to make his life as uneventful in the migration as possible. And we'll be actually communicating webinars and training that he can come, attend, ask questions at will. And as those invitations come along, any of the board are welcome to attend as well. That's really all I have.
Okay, I appreciate that, Gay. Thank you so much. So we're going to turn now to questions or comments by members of the committee. Any member of our committee have any comments regarding this presentation? Barbara?
Thank you, Shelley. I don't have any comments.
Okay. All right. With that, we will move to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, I do not see any hands raised for this item.
All right, thank you. Then we'll go ahead and close public comment. And I want to thank Bruce and Gay for joining us here this morning, and we will look forward to seeing you again sometime soon.
Great. As soon as we can come see you, we will. And I know Chris and I touched base a few times during all the fire issues, and it sounds like, you know, everybody in your group came through okay, but
I think everybody was fortunate and fared pretty well. So thank you for your concern.
Yeah, I could, you could definitely, we could see the smoke from here, believe it or not. No. We had orange skies and we could smell the smoke here in Nebraska, and we're what, 1700 miles away, 1400 miles.
Wow. Well, it's so, winds come from the west.
Yep. Glad you all came through okay.
Thank you so much. And listen,
thank you. Thank you for your business. Happy holidays.
To you as well. Thank you. All right. This was an informational item only. So that brings us to the next item, which is upcoming topics. Chris?
Thank you again for the record, Chris Kyler, Finance Director. We're still striving to reach the December date for the audit report, but I have to tell you, I think that's fairly unlikely. So I think the audit presentation is probably going to wind up being in January. We're making good progress. There is one accounting change that's involved in this year's financials, having to do with the mitigation funds that we're working through. The auditors have not yet identified any major issues or concerns, but we haven't had our exit conference yet either. But I'm still going to put it on the calendar for December, but I suspect it will be January when we actually bring you the audit itself. And then we owe you some briefings on building repairs and the plans for the office building. I will say that we last week we received the electric vehicle charging stations, and so we've been talking to the contractors about installing them. We actually think we can do that work now. It doesn't involve moving a lot of earth, so we don't have to worry about grading season. But we're making progress on at least that part of the changes to have two vehicle charging stations. Actually, it'll charge four stations, two posts with four stations. And we're getting ready to move out on some of the other changes as well, and we'll brief you on those. With that, I think we've gone long enough, and I'm keeping you from lunch. So.
Okay. All right. Well, then we will expedite the completion of this committee meeting. Let's go quickly to public comment. If no members of the committee have any comments or questions, any member of the public wishing to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, there is no public comment.
Okay, thank you. We will close public comment and move on to the next agenda item, committee member comments. Any member of the committee have any comments they wish to make? All right. Seeing none, we will move on to our last public comment period. If any member of the public wishes to address the Operations and Governance Committee on this on any agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria?
Madam Chair, there is no further public comment.
All right. Thank you. Then we'll move to adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right, we have a motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thumbs up. All right, aye. Thank you, everyone. And Maria, I presume, is legal committee, have they concluded their meeting? Julie, do you know?
I have not heard, Shelley. I'm expecting us to still begin at noon.
All right. So the governing board meeting will commence at 12 noon unless otherwise advised. All right, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.